You're listening to RTE Lyric Live with the National Symphony Orchestra.
2010 saw the 30th anniversary of the composition of The Suite by Sean Davey, The Brendan Voyage, for orchestra and Uilleann Pipes. To mark the occasion, I was privileged to be part of a roundtable discussion about the music and the extraordinary story that inspired it. And sitting around that table, the composer Sean Davey, Liam O'Flynn, world-renowned piper for whom the piece was written, Harry Bradshaw, the RTE radio producer who was behind the original commission, and explorer and writer Tim Severin, who recreated The Voyage of St. Brendan. Tonight, we hear some highlights from that gathering. I started by asking Sean why he thought the piece has such lingering appeal.
Well, I think the sound of the pipes has a lot to do with it, and it's the particular mix of the pipes with the orchestra. And then I think everybody identifies with Tim's incredible voyage across the Atlantic in a large curragh and is still full of admiration for it. So a very romantic story and an interesting collection of sounds, maybe, and a few tunes.
Yeah. It had all the ingredients. It had adventure and daring and life-threatening situations, and these were so evocatively represented in the music.
Well, I hope so, yes. Actually, Tim has had the film of the original voyage restored by RTE Archives and did us the great honour of including the music that we wrote in evocation of his voyage is now dubbed onto the film, which it wasn't originally, of course, because it hadn't been written.
Liam, did you have any idea that this would take off in the way that it did?
Oh, absolutely none. And it's, you know, the idea of working with an orchestra had been in the back of my mind for a long time. I'd no idea how it could ever happen. But when it did, I mean, it was initially a ferociously, terrifyingly daunting, but also really exciting prospect, you know. Somehow, as Sean just mentioned, that very unique voice of the Uilleann Pipes seems to blend so well with the orchestral sound. And, yeah, it was a terrific experience. Mm.
Tim, if we can get to the story that inspired this music. You yourself have done lots of extraordinary expeditions over the years. And just personally, what drives you to put yourself into these situations?
I think a sense of curiosity. I've always looked at the stories of legends, and particularly myths that involve journeys, usually sea journeys, and tried to define whether there's an element of truth in what seems to be something that's pretty miraculous and unlikely. And the Navigatio, the Voyage of St. Brendan, is right at the head of the list, a very, very famous text. I was attracted by the notion of seeing, well, could there have been any truth in that legend? I was trained as a geographer, self-taught as a sailor, and came to realise that small boats can go a great distance.
And, of course, there was huge preparation in setting off on this voyage. Apart from the historical research that you did into the actual story, the building of the boat was a fascinating undertaking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there are sort of two types of preparation of that. One is that the purely practical one of finding the correct materials that would have been available to a boat builder in the time of St. Brendan, you know, the right sort of leather, the type of thread, even how the stitching is done. And we would also know the types of timber that were growing. And we tried to stay as honest as that. There was an anthropological research, which was just as vital. And that was actually to go to Kerry and talk to people who handled curraghs at sea. I actually built a small two-hand curragh with a curragh builder to learn actually about the construction of the modern curragh, but also talking with fishermen. And in a sense, I think that almost saved our lives, because when we got into very heavy weather between Iceland and Greenland, I remembered the advice given by one of the fishermen, saying that he had survived some very bad weather when out fishing by hanging onto his nets and using them as a sea anchor rather than turning and going into shore. And some of the curraghs that tried to make land were overturned, and I think the fishermen were drowned. But it was that sort of, if you like, anthropological, social research, which is very important, learning from the people who handled the modern vessels.
And certainly one thing that you draw attention to in the book is that, and you use the phrase, and it's a lovely phrase, that the Brendan luck that you had, meeting a whole string of people or incidents that had a positive bearing on the final result, which is the boat.
Yes, it was. I don't know whether it was, well, it was partly luck and partly, I think, sheer bloody persistence. There were some quite extraordinary things, like, you know, being in a very large library amongst the book stacks, miles and miles of book stacks, and looking for an illustration of the sort of boat that Brendan might have used, and actually pulling down a dusty volume and opening it on the very page, and there is the little drawing jumps straight off the page at you. I mean, I could have spent months down there looking
the
for the right
of
thing.
That, yeah. Did you ever think you wouldn't make it? Did you ever have doubts?
Yes, I suppose so. I hasten to add that this wasn't a solo thing on my part. I had an excellent crew, three people with me. And I think at one stage, when you're a team out in very difficult conditions, you yourself perhaps think, oh, well, we're not going to make it. But, you know, you're with colleagues and you feel that as a team, you should be able to get through.
Harry, you were crucial to the development of the music and the recording of the music. Tell us about your involvement.
Well, I moved from being a sound man in radio in 1979 and I moved to the music department as a producer. And The Long Note was my main job. The second programme I was given was a new idea, which I came up with, was basically to try and merge some of the new music and the new writers that were out there with a weekly disc programme. I had my antenna out for talented people who were around, and I remember Jollyon Jackson, wonderful character who died far too young. He did a couple of wonderful pieces for me, illustrating stories. And Jollyon mentioned the work that Sean was doing. So we met here one day for a chat in the canteen and radio, and we were looking for something that we might be able to work on. And Sean was reading at the time the Brendan Voyage, and he had the paperback with him. So we hit on the idea, why not try to illustrate this book musically? So Sean gave it some thought and came back then with an outline. It was difficult enough to get through the system because the idea basically was that Sean would use the Illum pipes in some way to illustrate the boat, and then the orchestra would be the sea and everything that was drawn at it. So it meant a couple of days of recording with the concert orchestra, which was a very difficult thing to get, and particularly for something that was experimental like this. And I was lucky that my boss was Michael Casey, who was the assistant head of music. He was also the manager of the orchestra, the concert orchestra. So I sold Michael on the idea, and he said, OK, give it a try anyway, see what comes out of it. So we got our couple of days with the orchestra, and that led to the session. And to present it then, I thought that the music needed something really special. So I thought really the only person who could do this justice was Tim himself. So I thought I would try and get Tim to narrate the story. I wrote to his literary agent in London and wasn't sure if I'd ever hear anything back. But a few months later, a letter came into me from Oman, and it was from Tim, who was on his next project. And he loved the idea as I had laid it out in the letter. And I found I was pushing an open door, because he said when they were building the boat, they had spent a lot of their time listening to Planxty tapes. And, of course, Tim was a fan of Liam, so that made things quite easier.
Quite a story in itself. Sean, it's one thing asking Liam, who's an amazing piper, to, I suppose, adapt in a way to playing with the symphony orchestra, but it's a whole other thing asking the 70 or 80 or whatever members of a symphony orchestra to, I suppose, modify their way of thinking about music to accommodate a traditional musician into their midst. How did they take to that?
They were very good about it, is the short answer. The long answer is that Tim just said that he was a self-taught sailor. I was a self-taught composer. I think one of the difficulties that Harry might have encountered was the question of what was this guy's track record writing for an orchestra. I didn't have one. It was the first time I'd ever written for a full orchestra, and it was the first time I'd offered a tune to an Illum piper. So rookie composer. A lot of advice from anybody who would give it to me. I think Harry paved the way for me to have a few conversations with the conductor of the orchestra, Pranchius Odin, who was extremely helpful. But it was really just sort of cobbling together any hints I could get, really. So what went out in front of the orchestra was very experimental, and possibly, I mean, I knew it was very dangerous. I had nightmares about it for the weeks leading up to that, going through the door into the studio. I dreaded it, but it was what I wanted to do. And Liam was very solidly behind it, and we both went through the door into Studio One in this building 30 years ago, feeling very, very apprehensive indeed.
So did you have the flashbacks when you came in today and remember what it was all about?
The question you put to Sean about accommodating, the orchestra accommodating to me, but really me trying to accommodate to the orchestra. And one of the areas I found particularly different and difficult as a traditional musician was that to try and get your sort of head into the way an orchestra breathes, if you like, musically, especially in slow pieces, it's like, the only way I can describe it, it's like a very broad beat, and there's a wonderful amount of space created in there for the music, and basically coming to terms with that, and for me allowing that to happen within my playing, it was a difficult thing to get around, but it was actually a wonderful education, if you like, and development, I think, in my playing. Yeah.
So there's kind of traditional forms. I mean, you built some of the music, Sean, on traditional forms, the kind of dance forms and all the rest. But as you say, Liam, that sort of sweepy type of thing, which is very much a tone picture, really, and very illustrative of the story.
Well, part of the intention for the music was that if a Curragh could sing, this would be its voice. And of course, using an orchestra as a metaphor or as a means for creating a soundscape for the ocean and the sky and the animals that live in and above it, that's a well-trodden metaphor, and orchestras are wonderful at that.
Mm-hmm. So. It sounds very magnificent, especially those kind of large, weighty parts of the orchestral colour that you're able to paint. Tim, do you like the music?
Yes, I love it. And it's you see, I come to it from the point of view of a words man. I do books, I do narrative. And here, to listen to narrative in music, it's tremendous. I understand it because, this all, in a sense, I can always remember getting a very, very polite letter from Sean saying, would I object to the idea of him writing some music based on the book? And, now years later, it's it's a bit like one of those folders where you have the sort of the CD is for sale alongside the book in the same package, and they complement one another.
You must be very chuffed that something that you had initiated led to such a significant musical work being added to the repertoire.
I'm enormously flattered by it and pleased, because also there are a lot of people who I'm aware of who are not readers, but in fact the sheer numbers of listeners who love the music, I'm sure far outweighs the number of people who've actually read the book. And this again is taking the Brendan story, if you like, the Brendan legend, and re-energizing the whole thing. It's in a vast way, it's great.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have become aware of the legend of St. Brendan because they came through it via the music.
Oh, yes. And Sean just now mentioned the remastering of the film, and it has got his music, which is with it now, which is something I've always wanted. And in the last few days, the emails have been coming in to me from people who are saying, where can I get a copy of the music and the film?
Throughout that day, Brendan staggered forward, bumping and slithering between the ice floes, and we wondered if her leather hull would stand up to the battering. After 14 hours, the danger seemed to be lessening, when, without warning, Brendan struck a submerged piece of ice. We felt her give a peculiar shudder. She was holed. Anxiously, we searched for the puncture, and found a hole a few inches below the waterline. We cut spare leather and then, plunging raw hands into the frozen sea, George started stitching on a patch from the outside. If he failed, Brendan was done for. Inside the hull, Tronda pushed the needle back. 3 frozen hours later, Brendan was saved and watertight again. Leaving the pack ice behind, she sailed on for her goal, and our life on board returned to its old pattern. Tronda fed us. George steered. Boots took pictures.
This is Brendan, 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 calling Dee Reed, over.
And I tried to let the outside world know where we were.
Sailing vessel Brendan, this is Anthony Coast Guard Radio. Anthony Coast Guard Radio. Yes, I'm reading you, but your signals are very weak. Go ahead.
One of the more dramatic moments from a film, which is actually chock-a-block full of dramatic moments, taken from the film documentary of the Brendan Voyage. Liam, this was pioneering. Do you feel like a pioneer? Do you feel like you're pioneering something new when you, every time you go to play the Brendan Voyage?
Gosh, well, you know, every time, and I can't tell you how many times I've actually performed it, many, many times, but each time is, it's a new experience, and I always look forward to it hugely, yeah. And I've performed with many, you know, orchestras from different countries and that. And that's always a very, really exciting and interesting business as well, because they've never seen the instrument before. They've never heard it, et cetera, et cetera. And the reaction initially, like, is always, well, they're not quite sure what they're going to hear or what, you know, what this thing is all about. And I'm delighted to say that, you know, every performance, they've always been, you know, really, really got into the music. And found like that had a whole new musical experience, I guess. Yeah. And the same, I guess, applies to new audiences to the music. It's an amazing piece in that to hear it on recording is fine, it's great, but to hear it performed live is really, I think it works much better live because it has such energy and power in it, yeah.
Sure. Sean, do you think this music that you composed changed the relationship between classical music and traditional music in Ireland forever? To change the landscape? Do you think it was? I mean, I think it was that significant. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I really don't know the answer. I don't know how to answer the question. It seems to work for a lot of people, and whether it'll go on to future generations, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, the business of bringing different, you know, musical traditions together, musical idioms together, it's such an exciting business to be at. And it's something, you know, before the Brendan Voyage that I found myself doing anyway. And I've always had this musical curiosity. It's an extremely difficult thing, I think, to make it work musically. But when you do, you've created something new. And I think Sean has got there.
I think one of the things that I mean, I've been noticing lately is that really what happens in the piece of music is that the orchestra accompany the pipes. The orchestra accompanied the soloist to a great extent.
To some extent. But the wonderful thing, I think, about the Brendan Voyage is that there's a real dialogue, a musical dialogue and interaction between the traditional musician, the traditional instrument, and the classical orchestra. And I think that's where it really works. Yeah, it's not just the orchestra accompanying the musician or the instrument.
I feel slightly humble because when you go to hear the symphony orchestra play, for example, playing the great classics, they're playing these huge, huge orchestral statements. They're not accompanying a soloist. Of course they are when they play a concerto or something like that. So I've got some perspective on it over the years. You know. But I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of Liam. And I'm very proud of having been able to represent Tim's experience to some extent.
Rightly so.
Not to the full extent, but to some perhaps.
Harry, do you see what you started? Are you, you must be delighted with the longevity of this.
I don't think anybody thought at the time that it would lead to the success that it did become, but we got our hour-long radio programme out of it anyway, and that was the main thing, so the bet had been squared off.
Harry Bradshaw there, along with Tim Severin, Liam O'Flynn and Sean Davey, recorded in 2010 on the 30th anniversary of the composition of the Brendan Voyage, Suite for Ilan Pipes and Orchestra.